Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me in the Bettors Box with BangTheBook.com's MLB Betting Podcast for Thursday, May 2nd. I'm your host, Adam Burke. This and every edition of the Bettors Box, presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. BTB, the number 200 is that promo code, 100% deposit match bonus for the Sportsbook, 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino at BetDSI. It's only a game until you bet it. Monday, Thursday format here with the Bettors Box. As you know, coming up after the weekend, we'll have another edition of the Monday Mailbag at Skating Tripods on Twitter or Adam at BangTheBook.com via email if you want to send in your questions for that. Also, Adam at BangTheBook.com via email if you want to sign up for the notes for the editions of the Bettors Box. My apologies here. I think the change of seasons and some of the allergy stuff that's out there kind of throwing me off a little bit today. But in any event, you can check out my daily picks and tips piece every day over at BangTheBook.com. Also, our NBA series previews and game write-ups for the NBA playoffs. Parker Michaels still doing fine work in the NHL with the second round of the NHL playoffs. We've got a write-up for the Kentucky Oaks for the Kentucky Derby. Recorded a Kentucky Derby podcast yesterday with Brian Blessing. Make sure you check that out. It was a very, very good segment. One of the best I think we've ever done here on Bang the Book Radio. So that's definitely worth your time. Then tomorrow we'll have a UFC preview for this weekend with Christian Pena. I'll record that here this afternoon. All right, we'll go through today's show with our format beyond the box score. Then down no pick for tonight with only two night games. Don't like anything in either one of those. Then a look here at the weekend ahead. So let's go ahead and start with a look beyond the box score. And let's take a look at this Boston Red Sox sweep of the Oakland Athletics. And Oakland's just in a complete tailspin right now. And away from home in particular, they have been awful. Their pitchers are 4-11 on the road with a 5.84 ERA. They've also given up 8 unearned runs that aren't listed in those ERA calculations. And also here, offensively for them, 2.05 average, 2.98 on base, 3.05 slugging percentage. Over the last 14 games, they've only hit 7 home runs. It has been an absolute mess for Oakland. A lot of people did think that this team was something of a regression candidate coming into the season. My favorite season win total over, of course, is on the Oakland A's. So hopefully they get this thing figured out. But for right now, you know, their lack of starting pitching really crushing them on the road. And the fact that their offense has gone in the tank at the doesn't really help either. They've had some bullpen blowups. Blake Treinen had one in that series against Toronto. Joaquin Soria has been awful. And the A's really dedicated a big portion of their offseason resources to Joaquin Soria. Has not worked out for them at all. They do have a lot of help coming from down below in the minor leagues as guys get healthier. But for right now, the guys on that 25-man roster need to figure it out, and they are having some difficulties with that. Should get Matt Olson back here very soon after a broken hamate bone sidelined him. But still, Oakland's got a lot of soul-searching to do here with a long trip back home coming up here after this weekend's series against the Pittsburgh Pirates. As far as Boston goes, look, they scored 21 runs in these three games, but I still think there's a lot of room left for this offense to get better. They only had 5 doubles and 4 home runs in this series. They're not getting extra base hits. They're cashing in on their opportunities when they do get those chances with runners in scoring position, but they're not hitting for any kind of slugging percentage this season. It's very surprising to me. I know the weather in Boston has not been good. I presume that they will get better as it warms up a little bit. But this is a team that doesn't really do damage with extra base hits. It's a big reason why they haven't gotten off to the start that they wanted to. A big reason why they're lacking on high velocity contact. So even though they scored 7 runs per game in this series, even though it looks like the breakout is here, I don't necessarily think that it is, because they're still not doing a whole lot in terms of extra base hits, and we would certainly expect that from a lineup like the Boston Red Sox. The Braves took 2 of the first 3 from the Padres, game 4 in that series going on as I'm recording here. And once again, the song remains the same for the Padres. They had 3 solo home runs off Julio Teheran. They hit a solo shot off of Max Fried. They had a grounded in a double play run scored in the first game. Their offense against right-handed pitching has just not performed well. And really overall on the season here, they're not constructing a lot of run-scoring opportunities. They've hit 28 solo home runs. They have 16 homers with men on base, but 14 of those with only one runner on, so only 2-run homers. The Padres have, you know, the lowest number of plate appearances with a runner in scoring position this season. This is just not a very good offensive team. In the first three games of this series, 1-for-15 with a runner in scoring position. The Braves, on the other hand, with 27 chances with a runner in scoring position in the first three games, but they only had 4 hits. So it's been a very low-scoring series here. The Padres are doing a very good job of stranding runners on the pitching side. On the offensive side, they're not creating enough opportunities, and it really makes me wonder about them long-term here. As the league gets more of a look at Nick Margavicius, at Chris Paddock, at Cal Quantrill, who made his major league debut in this series, I worry about the long-term viability of the Padres with, you know, a very anemic offense and a really opportunistic pitching staff, I think. Yes, they haven't given up a lot of hits. Their outfield defense is not very good. Their infield defense is very strong, so at least that's helped them. But as more balls start to find holes, as these pitchers have some control hiccups, stuff like that, the Padres' offense is probably not going to be able to out-hit those mistakes. So I'd be very, very wary of the Padres here going forward. Obviously, their bullpen is very, very strong. But from a full game standpoint, San Diego does worry me here as some of their pitchers get exposed a little bit to the major leagues some more, as they face lineups for a second time, things of that sort, even a third time in some instances. The Padres do concern me long-term here in the National League West. So we'll see how that plays out for them. We'll see how today's game winds up finishing up for them. But a lot of concerns about this offense and about what happens as this pitching staff starts to regress. Speaking of regression, let's talk about that here for the remainder of the Beyond the Box Score segment. Let's look at some regression candidates here in the starting pitching department early on this season based on some of the metrics that are out there. And there are a couple of things I want our listeners to keep in mind here. Left on base percentage and batting average on balls in play. These are two statistics that never reach a stabilization point, at least not with any sample size that pitchers are capable of reaching over the course of one season. So one of the reasons why we key in on left on base percentage and BABIP, batting average on balls in play, is because those two statistics are very much subject to variance. A lot of statistics are, but they do reach stabilization points over the course of the season. Left on base percentage and BABIP never really do. So that's why those are two metrics that we key in on, looking for pitchers to get better or for pitchers to get worse. So as we look at the left on base percentage department here, let's look at this list of names with the highest left on base percentage marks of qualified starting pitchers here so far. Hyunjin Ryu, 93.2% left on base percentage. Justin Verlander, 93%. Tyler Glasnow, 90.6%. Luis Castillo, 90.3%. Caleb Smith, 90.2%. Zach Davies, 87.4%. Max Fried, 86.8%. Merrill Kelly, 85.9%. Jack Flaherty, 85.6%. Jose Berríos, 85.4%. Now, you will have some outliers. Like last year, Blake Snell up in the 88% range. You will have some outliers, but you're not going to have this many guys north of 85%. So I would definitely look for regression in the near term for these pitchers. Now, some of these guys do have high home run numbers. Some of these guys do have high strikeout numbers. That does allow you to carry a higher left on base percentage because strikeouts obviously end innings without balls in play and home runs clear off the bases. So a guy like Justin Verlander, for example, high home run rate, high strikeout rate, he's probably going to stay up there in the 88 to 90% range for quite some time. Some of these other guys, that probably won't be the case, especially somebody like a Zach Davies, who doesn't have the strikeouts, doesn't allow a lot of home runs. He's a clear-cut regression candidate in the near future. Same thing for Hyunjin Ryu. Same thing, I think, for a guy like Caleb Smith. Same thing for a guy like Merrill Kelly. So these are all guys that I will probably look to fade, whether it's from a total standpoint or a money line standpoint here in the very near future. Also, a lot of these guys running low batting average on balls and play marks. Jack Flaherty, for example, at 313 is not. So you know, that's also an important thing you want to keep in mind. As BABIPs regress, as they come back down or go back up, it generally has an impact on left on base percentage as well. Usually, as the BABIP progresses, the left on base percentage will go down because you're going to see a lot more guys on base. A lot more of those guys are going to wind up scoring, stuff like that. So keep an eye out for that with those 10 guys here who are really overachieving in the left on base percentage department. 10 guys who are not. Jameson Taillon, 52.1%. Matt Harvey, 56.4%. Noah Syndergaard, 56.8%. Ivan Nova, 57.6%. Kevin Gausman, 60%. Garrett Cole, 60.1%. Pablo Lopez for the Marlins, 60.2%. Madison Bumgarner, 60.5%. Yusei Kikuchi, 61.1%. Jordan Zimmerman, 61.4%. Colin McHugh, 63.3%. Carlos Rodon, 63.9%. Mike Fiers, 64.1. Sandy Alcantara, 64.9. Again, some of these guys with higher home run numbers, you would think their left on base percentages would be a little bit better, but they're still not stranding runners. Still some higher batting averages on balls in play. Look, when you've got anybody below 60%, that's going to come up. So Taillon, Harvey, Thor, and Ivan Nova are guys that should definitely be on the rise sooner rather than later. Same thing for Garrett Cole and Colin McHugh as well, just because of the number of strikeouts that they have. A couple of Marlins on the list here where eventually Marlins Park will help them, and eventually the defense should get a little bit better there for Miami. But again, the expectation of positive or negative regression is what we're looking at here. When you've got this many guys below 65%, all of these guys should be on the rise. I think last year the lowest qualified guy was 64.5% or something like that. So a lot of these guys should be on the rise very, very soon. And again, left on base percentage, a statistic that never stabilizes. So it's open to a lot of variance, open to a lot of movement. A lot of these guys, especially the strikeout guys, should be on the rise pretty quickly here. Bumgarner's a guy I'm keyed in on. Taillon, Syndergaard, Cole, McHugh. These are guys that should definitely get better as the season goes along, and probably in the nearer term as well. For some of these guys, it will take some time because they're just, you know, not very good pitchers, or there's something else in their profile that's leading to a low left on base percentage. But again, to roll through these two lists again, on the high side, guys you probably want to look to fade here to a certain degree: Ryu, Verlander, Glasnow, Castillo, Caleb Smith, Davies, Fried, Merrill Kelly, Jack Flaherty, and then Barrios. Taillon, Harvey, Thor, Nova, Gausman, Cole, Pablo Lopez, Bumgarner, Kikuchi, Zimmerman, McHugh, Rodon, Fiers, Alcantara. The first half of that list, guys you would expect to start giving up some more runs and stranding fewer runners. The second half of that list, guys you expect to be doing better and stranding more runners. So along those same lines, let's look at the biggest ERA and FIP discrepancies here. Again, FIP, fielder independent pitching, strikeouts, walks, hit by pitches, and home runs. ERA, of course, subject to how defenses play, where batted balls are hit, stuff like that. The biggest ERA and FIP discrepancy, so this is high ERA, low FIP. Nova, a 3.3 run difference between the two. Syndergaard, 2.65. Lynn, 1.99. Scherzer, 1.93. Reynaldo Lopez, 1.79. Rodon, 1.67. Wheeler, 1.48. Lucchesi, 1.37. Harvey, 1.27. So these are all guys that we would expect some positive regression from for one reason or another, because they've got those higher ERAs and those lower FIPs. Now, guys with low ERAs and higher FIPs, Zach Davies, 2.54 runs difference between his FIP and his ERA, the biggest in baseball. He is a very clear regression candidate here in the near future. Aaron Sanchez, 2.12. Yu Darvish, 1.58. Luis Castillo, a guy I'm looking to fade, 1.34. Merrill Kelly, 1.29. Verlander, 1.28. Fried, 1.27. Gray, 1.20. That's John Gray. Samardzija, 1.18. And then Wainwright, 1.17. So that list of guys, all guys I would expect some negative regression from here in the very near future. The top list of guys, some positive regression coming for them. Again, Adam at bangthebook.com to get the notes for the betters box here. I think that's probably a good idea for you with these lists. Also, some big Sierra discrepancies. Sierra Skill Interactive ERA takes into account batted ball types. More signs here for Zach Davies to be a regression candidate with a 5.28 Sierra. Aaron Sanchez, 5.45 Sierra. Luis Castillo, 3.65 Sierra. Merrill Kelly, 4.75. Samardzija, 4.82. So again, as we get increased sample sizes here, a lot of things can happen in a small sample size. As we get bigger sample sizes, guys do regress to their FIPs, to their XFIPs, to their Sierras, left on base percentages regress, BABIPs regress, all that type of stuff. All of this information available over at FanGraphs for you to look at the player pages, sort by the column headings. You'll be able to find some of these guys as well. And we also should start to see a lot of line moves on guys like this, moving on the guys in line for positive regression, moving against the guys in line for negative regression. And again, Sierra, not a stat I've talked about a lot, maybe one I should with the home run rates going around Major League Baseball this year, but Sierra is traditionally thought to be the best predictor of future ERA. So you see a guy like a Zach Davies with an ERA in the high ones and a Sierra of 5.28, very good regression candidate there, to say the least. Now, a lot of modelers are using XWOBA, expected weighted on base average. It's a metric you can find over at StatCast. So I want to touch on this real quickly with some big gaps between WOBA, actual weighted on base average, and XWOBA, expected weighted on base average. Here's some pretty interesting guys here. Chad Bettis with a 4.46 WOBA, a 3.50 XWOBA. Corbin Burns, 5.29 WOBA, 4.46 XWOBA. Noah Syndergaard, who's come up a lot here, 3.55 WOBA, 2.83 XWOBA. Carlos Carrasco, 3.63 WOBA, 3.09 XWOBA. You've got Freddie Peralta, 3.75 WOBA, 3.22 XWOBA. Reynaldo Lopez, 3.90 WOBA, 3.38 XWOBA. Blake Snell, 3.07 and 2.55. Tyler Anderson, 4.67 and 4.17. Dylan Bundy, 3.97 and 3.54. Masahiro Tanaka, 3.39. 296. So Bettis, Burns, Syndergaard, Carrasco, Peralta, Lopez, Snell, Anderson, Bundy, and Tanaka. Guys, I would look for some line moves on here with the WOBA and XWOBA discrepancies. Obviously, Tyler Anderson with an XWOBA of 417. The implication is that he still won't be very good. Same thing with Corbin Burns. Same thing with Chad Bettis at 350. But Syndergaard, Carrasco, Snell, Tanaka, all guys in line for some positive regression here, at least according to the StatCast metrics, based on their batted ball data. Now, the list of guys with lower WOBAs and higher XWOBAs, these are fade candidates. These are guys that we would expect to see some less favorable results on batted balls from them. Felix Pena, 3.21 WOBA, 4.07 XWOBA. Yonny Chirinos, the bulk reliever for the Rays, 2.38 WOBA, 3.22 XWOBA for him. Aaron Sanchez, 292 WOBA, 374 XWOBA. Seeing a big line move against Aaron Sanchez tonight in that Jays versus Angels game. Again, modelers incorporating XWOBA into their spreadsheets. So we will see money coming in against the guys on this list that I'm talking about here. So far, Felix Pena, Yonny Chirinos, Aaron Sanchez, Shane Bieber, 269 WOBA, 347 XWOBA. John Lester, one of these times this dude's going to suck. 241 WOBA, 329 XWOBA. Domingo Herman, 224 WOBA, 291 XWOBA. Chris Paddock, 186 WOBA, 253 XWOBA. Homer Bailey, 298 WOBA, 365 XWOBA. And Brad Keller, 309 WOBA, 370 XWOBA. Money came in against Brad Keller in that start against the Rays earlier on this week. Some other guys keep on your radar. Trevor Bauer, Tyson Ross, Jeff Samardzija, Kyle Freeland. Again, this is very easy to go and look these things up over on Baseball Savant. I've got that YouTube video showing you how to use Baseball Savant. But it does seem to me like the line moves are no longer going to come from ERA and FIP and XFIP, at least not to the same degree that they have in the past. It'll be more about this StatCast data, and in particular, XWOBA. So again, guys like Aaron Sanchez, who's being bet against tonight, guys like Shane Bieber, who gets the start tomorrow night for the Indians, guys like John Lester, guys like a Brad Keller. Money will come in against a lot of these guys here, John Lester as well, as we go forward. So XWOBA, probably a metric that you want to familiarize yourself with, because a lot of modelers, a lot of people that move these lines, are using that in their spreadsheets, in their calculations. So you probably want to look to keep that in mind. And it's something that I should look to keep in mind a little bit more here as well. Again, Adam at bangthebook.com to get these lists of names. And I'll be talking about these guys in my picks and tips article probably pretty regularly here as we go forward. All right, let's roll through the exit velocity update real quickly here. Batting average on 95-plus mile-per-hour balls in play did drop 5 points league-wide down to 525. The top five, the Diamondbacks at 607, but they're down 23 points this week, down 40 over the last 2 weeks, and 54 points over the last 3 weeks. So that Diamondbacks offense is regressing as we all expected. The Mariners down to 592. They're down 29 points the last 2 weeks, 49 points the last 3 weeks, and their pitching staff starting to give up a lot more runs now. They're the worst defensive team in Major League Baseball. The Mariners are probably a fade team here for the next little while with that offensive regression, with such a bad defensive team, but also with some pitchers that, obviously kind of walk a fine line. We saw that with Marco Gonzalez yesterday. Mike Leake got blown up the last week. Felix Hernandez, obviously, kind of on borrowed time. The Mariners, probably a fade team overall. We'll probably see that in the betting market with people looking to go against Seattle. The Yankees up to 576. That's a 6-point increase from last week. Braves down to 572. They dropped 9 points. How about the Baltimore Orioles making some good contact on high-velocity batted balls at 565? But again, what's very important to point out here, the top five teams, the only teams that are 40 points higher than the league average. And as we're seeing the top two teams here, the Diamondbacks and the Mariners, consistently regressing towards that league average. So again, if nothing else, this shows you, what sample size means in terms of bringing those outliers down or raising some of those outliers up. So this is a very good indication of what that regression analysis style of handicapping should look like if everything goes according to plan. The bottom here, the Giants at 457, down 2 points. Red Sox up 6 to 476. Again, I think better days are coming for this Red Sox offense. Marlins at 486. They're up 11 points this week and up 36 points over the last 2 weeks. The Mets up 11 points to 487. How about the Detroit Tigers? On high-velocity contact, up 19 points this week to 489, up 65 points the last 2 weeks, up 96 points the last 3 weeks. So that Tigers offense getting up to a level of respectability here as we get some increased sample sizes. The WOBA, weighted on base average, on 95-plus mile-per-hour batted balls, 666 this week, down 1 point from last week. The Mariners still lead at 814, but they're down 32 points from last week, down 68 points over the last 3 weeks. And again, the Mariners have to outscore teams. So as their offense is regressing, they become a more difficult team to bet on. I think they are a fade team here, at least in the short term. Diamondbacks down to 791. That's a 31-point decrease from last week, down 98 points from the last 3 weeks. So they're coming back to earth in rapid fashion. Twins down 4 points to 730. The Braves and the Rangers sneak into the top five at 719 and 718, respectively. The Cardinals fell from 4th to 11th. They had one big week with a huge increase. Now they've fallen down pretty significantly. The bottom teams here, the Giants, 562. They're actually down 11 points. Marlins down 2 points to 562. Red Sox up 4 to 579. Tigers up 18 to 582. They're up 113 points in weighted on base average on high velocity contact here over the last 3 weeks. So very impressive for the Tigers here offensively over the last few weeks. And the Indians up 17 points to 596. Again, degrees of regression. The Giants offense sucks. The Marlins offense sucks. The Tigers offense is probably peaking right now. The Red Sox should get better. I don't know if the Indians will get better, but the Red Sox, again, lots of these signs of positive regression offensively for them as we go forward. All right, we go to the down the line segment here. Take a look at line moves dating back to Monday from when I was last on the air. So Michael Wacha money for the Cardinals against the Nationals here this week. Very steady Nationals fade this week, probably without Anthony Rendon in this lineup. We saw the same thing with the Pirates with Starling Marte's absence. I guess something that's very important to point out is, again, I've talked about this before, the modeling crowd runs the baseball betting market. When you take these important offensive resources out of the lineup and it changes those modeling projections, we will see line moves. That's something I've picked up on a lot more here this year than I've seen in past years, where when players are out of the lineup, we're seeing substantial line moves on those teams. The odds makers have not been prepared to make those adjustments for offensive players. A lot of odds makers and a lot of people still looking at the pitching side of things more than anything, but we're seeing big fades of the Nationals without Rendon, saw the big fades of the Pirates without Starling Marte. Keep an eye out for this because it does appear that these position players are not being accurately priced into those betting markets. Saw Mike Soroka money come in for the Braves. That was against the Padres. Not a big surprise there, as the Padres have been such a good fade for the first five, and anytime they take on a right-hander worth anything, they've had a lot of struggles here this year. Christian Yelich out of the lineup on Monday for the Brewers. We saw that line move down with Kyle Freeland on the mound in his return from a blood blister. He gave up four runs in the first inning. Wound up pitching okay after that, but Zach Davies, another lucky winner there in that one for the Brewers. Zach Davies is a big-time fade guy at this point in time. I looked to fade him Monday. Didn't work out. The Rockies didn't do much damage, and Freeland didn't pitch well. But I'll look to fade Davies here this weekend for sure. Also saw money come in against Brad Keller and the Royals on Monday. That was with the Tampa Bay Rays. Again, these ex-WOBA fades, I think, are going to be a common theme as we go forward here. Saw one on Monday with Davies. Saw one on Monday with Keller. Saw one on Tuesday with Luis Castillo. That was against the New York Mets. These are things that you definitely want to look for here, trying to get out in front of the betting market. Saw money come in against the Nationals again on Tuesday, as I mentioned, without Rendon in the lineup. Saw a fade of Walker Buehler in the Dodgers. Maybe that was just too big of a price. Then we saw some buyback on Buehler in the Dodgers. That was against Drew Pomeranz and the Giants. Money once again on Gerrit Cole. Gerrit Cole, again, very low left on base percentage. Money will keep coming in on him as we go forward. Also on Tuesday, we saw a Cole Hamels fade. That was for the Mariners, Felix Hernandez. The bullpen blew that one for the Mariners. We were on that game on Tuesday night. Wednesday, big fade of Max Scherzer. Once again, Rendon out of the lineup. Trey Turner still out of the lineup as well for the Nationals. So money coming in against Washington with regularity. That was actually Miles Mikolas in that start for the Cardinals, who has not pitched well at all this season. But money did come in on him. Saw money come in on Jacob deGrom on Wednesday. He talked about a mechanical fix that he was working on. Seemed to work for him. I talked a lot about him in yesterday's article, and he wound up pitching very, very, very well against that impotent Reds offense. But for DeGrom here, seems like he's probably okay. Regularly scheduled fade on Wednesday of Shelby Miller. That was with the Pirates. Shelby Miller has been bet against in all of his starts this year. I don't think that trend stops anytime soon. Also on Wednesday, we saw a big fade of Corey Kluber, who left the game with a fractured arm, wasn't pitching all that well before the injury. The Indians really up against it now, of course, with Kluber and Mike Clevinger out. And Clevinger, despite playing catch on the 60-day disabled list, he cannot come back until June 4th at the earliest. So the Indians down to 60% of their rotation for the entire month of May. Thursday, we saw some pretty heavy Red Sox money hit the board. That's David Price going up against the White Sox and Lucas Giolito. Again, this Red Sox offense at some point is going to really break out in dramatic fashion. Like, the market has kind of picked up on that, hence that move here today to put them as more than a $2 road favorite. Money on Tyler Skaggs and the Angels. That's against the Blue Jays. Again, that's a fade of Aaron Sanchez there in that one. Ex-WOBA, definitely something you want to keep in mind. It's over at Baseball Savant. It's pretty easy to find. You want to familiarize yourself with these things if you want to try to get out there in front of the betting markets and get some of that closing line value. All right, so let's take a look at the weekend ahead. Going to preview five series for you to wrap up this edition of the Bettors Box. Cardinals and Cubs. Usually I wait until the end with the Sunday Night Baseball matchups, but this one's really intriguing to me. Jack Flaherty, Kyle Hendricks on Friday, Michael Wacha, Yu Darvish on Saturday, Adam Wainwright, Jose Quintana on Sunday Night Baseball. The Cardinals are owning right-handed pitching right now. They're absolutely crushing right-handed pitching. They get a lefty in Quintana on Sunday who's pitched very, very well. So I think you may look to back the Cubs on Sunday, do like the Cardinals a little bit on Friday and Saturday here. But shaky bullpens both ways in this one. I think the Cardinals do have some regression signs in their bullpen. The Cubs bullpen has not been particularly good. Steve Cishek got that save in that game on the Mariners on Tuesday night, but a lot of middle stuff that he got away with. Very worried about this Cubs bullpen still. I think it's interesting, though, The Cardinals are 5-12 in their last 17 games, immediately following a series against the Cubs. They play the Phillies on Monday. I couldn't find this stat. I think it's 5-12. It may be 4-13 in their last 17. I was trying to find it this morning, couldn't find it. Either way, the Cardinals are very, very bad after they play the Cubs. Kind of one of those arch nemesis types of things. One of the reasons why we faded Houston on Monday night with their road game against the Twins. The Cardinals get the Phillies on Monday. So I'll probably look to back the Phillies at least for the first five on Monday, looking to play this angle. It's as close as we get to situational spots in Major League Baseball. I think we have one here with the Cardinals coming up on Monday night. All right, so the Mariners, Kikuchi and Shane Bieber on Friday. Kikuchi coming off of a one-inning start. The Mariners are doing this sporadically throughout the season to kind of lighten his workload a little bit. We'll see what happens with him. Kikuchi is a guy that I've been trying to fade in road spots because every time he goes to a new ballpark, it's an unfamiliar setting for him. You know, it's already a lot coming over from Japan, getting acclimated to, you know, United States culture and all that. And then every time he goes to a new ballpark, it's a new mound, it's a new setting, it's a new backdrop, it's a new situation. I think it's very tough for him. Probably like to play the over on Friday night, weather permitting, of course, with a lot of rain, and we'll see some wind in the forecast here in Cleveland this weekend. But Bieber's a regression guy, even though that Mariners offense is coming back to earth some. Kikuchi, worry about him on the road. Probably looking to play the over there on Friday night, but we'll see what that line looks like and what the weather looks like as well. Mike Leake, Carlos Carrasco on Saturday. Carrasco improving, Leake not so much. And then Eric Swanson and Trevor Bauer on Sunday. Swanson shut the Indians down in his MLB starting debut. Bauer, a little bit off here lately. Whether it's been the walks or it's been the command, something's been off a little bit. He was very upset about his start on Tuesday. We'll see how he rebounds on Sunday. The three remaining Indians starting pitchers go in this series here. So the things I've talked about coming to fruition here in this series, hopefully with Bieber, a little bit of a regression candidate, Leake getting pummeled lately. I think Carrasco is a good line there on Saturday night. Will be chalky, but I do think that, Saturday afternoon. I do think Carrasco is a good bet there Saturday afternoon. The Mariners, shaky bullpen, bad team defense. Be an interesting series here in Cleveland, to say the least. How about the Royals and the Tigers? A couple teams I haven't talked about too much here on the show. Pablo Lopez and Matt Boyd on Friday. Homer Bailey, Tyson Ross Saturday. Brad Keller, Spencer Turnbull on Sunday. Tigers offense is improving. I think the Tigers series price is worth a look here this weekend. The Royals don't have a very good offense. I guess sweep is possible here for the Tigers if Brad Keller's regression does show up on Sunday. But I do like the under a little bit here in this series. Royals with the good outfield defense, big ballpark. Again, pay attention to the weather factors. Could be wind here in this series. But I do think that these three games could be relatively low scoring, although Tyson Ross is a guy with some ex-WOBA regression coming. So maybe Saturday you kind of back off of that a little bit with Homer Bailey. But I think Friday and Sunday could be pretty decent under opportunities for us in those two games. Dodgers and Padres here. Clayton Kershaw, Eric Lauer on Friday. Rich Hill, Joey Lucchesi on Saturday. Kenta Maeda, Nick Margavicius on Sunday. Three more lefties coming at the Dodgers here. They've been seeing a bunch of them lately, and they haven't done particularly well in that split. Padres with some first five scoring issues. Very home run dependent, as I mentioned before. Hill doesn't allow a lot of home runs. Maeda doesn't allow a lot of home runs. Who knows what we get from Clayton Kershaw. But interesting NL West series there as the Padres finally make their way back home. Finally, the Astros and the Angels. This one is in Monterrey, Mexico. Off day Friday. Very, very weird. Then Saturday and Sunday, they'll play two games down south of the border. Miley and Cahill is the matchup on Saturday. Two ground ball guys here in the altitude of Monterrey, Mexico. That could help both of them. May look at an under on Saturday, depending on what that total looks like. Then Justin Verlander, Matt Harvey, a couple of fly ball guys in altitude on Sunday. But Verlander going up against a very right-handed heavy Angels lineup should benefit him a little bit. But again, these games in Mexico, very interesting for a variety of different reasons. We'll see what that total looks like on Saturday. May end up with an under ticket in that Miley and Cahill start. As I mentioned, we'll do UFC on Friday with Christian Pina. If you missed the Kentucky Derby podcast with Brian Blessing, I highly encourage you to check that out. Also, check out my write-ups for the Oaks and the Derby over at bangthebook.com. We got a lot of great stuff going on over there. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. And remember that you'll never strike out when you're in the better's box.